Welcome to Mox on the Mic, your exclusive look into all things Chattanooga athletics. Here's your host, Chris Goforth.
Welcome in this week to Mox on the Mic. I'm Chris Goforth. Glad to have you along with us. And this week, we visit with a guy that has been behind the microphone for every significant moment in women's basketball history with Chattanooga. Larry Ward has delivered it with a smooth and distinct style that is very much unique to him and one that has been beloved by Chattanooga women's basketball fans for many, many years. Larry has announced, in conjunction with the athletic department, you may have heard by now, that he is stepping down as the radio voice of Chattanooga women's basketball. Larry's had a profound impact on so many of us in the broadcast business, both locally and nationally, and I am certainly a part of that group. So it was fun to get a minute to hear his recollections of his time broadcasting women's basketball here and kind of how it all got started. Here's our conversation with Larry Ward. Well, Larry, appreciate the time. It's always good to get a chance to catch up a little bit. And I get there's probably a lot of people that I guess came to know you as the announcer for women's basketball, probably in that remarkable run that Wes Moore had here during his time. However, I want to go back to where it all started for you, because your involvement with women's basketball at UTC goes back long before Wes Moore got here, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And Chris, really, it didn't happen by accident, but as it turned out, it was kind of a fun start. 1989 with Coach Barrett, and I had met Coach during that first summer of doing baseball with the Lookouts. Had him on the air, as a matter of fact, and he shared doctor information for dentistry and all this stuff, and we had a good time. In fact, we played golf, I think, a couple of times, too. Anyway, when the winter came, I dropped in on a practice one time, and I thought, wow, this is women's basketball? The last time I had seen a women's basketball game was in high school, and I had when I was doing their games, the boys' games. And I thought, boy, this is silly. They got six people. They got this, that, whatever. Anyway, it was like men's game. And I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. So I went to another practice later on. And so I took Craig aside. I said, let me ask you a question. What would you think if your basketball games could be on radio? And he said, what? I said, radio. Why aren't you on radio? The guys are. Why aren't you on radio? Well, I don't know. We've never pursued it. So one thing led to another, and I went to, he said, you have to go talk to the athletic director about it. Harold Wilkes was the athletic director. And I sat down with him and I explained to him what I wanted to do. And he said, hey, that sounds great. I said, how much would it cost me for the rights? No, it's not going to cost you anything. I said, okay. So I hit the street. I've sold radio advertising for my entire career. I hit the street. We found sponsors. I found a station that was reasonable. And that's how it started in 1989, the winter of 89. And we went for 3 years. Needless to say, it wasn't a profitable situation. When it came to the point of not being able to do it anymore, I went to Craig and told him, I said, but I'll help you out in another way. You want me to do the public address or this, that, or whatever. And so I did that for some time and then did some SEC stuff as well. And then along came Wes Moore. And by his third year, I guess it was 2021. Anyway, I got a phone call from him, and he wasn't begging me. He was asking me sternly if I would come and do the games again, because apparently he'd heard about it. And you did some of the games at one time for Wes, I think, didn't you?
Yeah. So I did the last, Was it last couple of years of Coach Parrott and then the first year of Coach Moore? And how I got into it was through you. It was you and Randy Smith. Randy Smith brought the idea to me first because he had talked to Craig somewhere, and Randy said, hey, this would be great for you. And Larry used to do it. Call Larry. So I called you, and that's how I spent, 5 years doing it. I guess it was 4 years with Craig and the first year with Wes. And you at that time were the PA announcer.
Yes.
For the home games.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And I vaguely remember that, but now you jog my memory as my memory gets older each minute. That's right. That's exactly how it happened. And I don't know why, I don't even remember the station you were on.
Oh, we were on the old, we were on two different ones when I did it. We were on the old WDEF AM at 1370, which no longer exists.
Right.
At least in that form. And then later we were in the old WDOD AM, which was the first radio station in Chattanooga. And unfortunately that station no longer exists at all at AM 1310. So those were the two stations that I was on with.
Right. Oh, okay. Well, I guess from that standpoint, I got to turn that back off. From that standpoint, it was one thing that led to another, eventually with Wes, and he called me and he said, look, we need for you to be back. We need for you to be on the air. And so that's when Frank Burke got involved, the owner of the ball club, the baseball team. And, he said, well, let's do it. And I thought I had a guy for that job, and it turns out that I was the guy in the long run that was going to do the games and sell all the advertising, which I sold about 95% of the advertising. I went back to some of the people that worked with me before, and we got it going. Frank pretty much financed the whole thing. It was a lookouts deal, and we just, one thing led to another, and we just had a good time, and it worked out well, and it was a lot of fun.
You bring up Frank Burke, and I've always been a big fan, and still am a big fan of Frank, because there's so many things that Frank did that he helped facilitate athletic wise in our community, Larry, that a lot of people don't know and will probably never know the extent that Frank would, and the last thing anybody ever wanted to do, you never wanted to tell Frank Burke he couldn't do something.
Exactly.
Because if you told him he couldn't do it, then you can darn well make sure Frank was going to find a way to be able to do it and to make it happen.
Yes.
Putting women's basketball on the air was a part of that. I mean, that was something that, kind of like you, he was sort of like, well, this is nuts. They're not on. Let's do this.
Right. No, you're absolutely correct. And when Learfield came along and he wasn't notified of the change that was going to happen. And it really kind of upset him a little bit. But as I pointed out to him, I said, Frank, you know how much money you're going to save over the course of a winter time by not producing the games anymore? And he went, oh, yeah, that's right. He liked that idea of putting a few thousand dollars back in his pocket and keeping it in his pocket, as it were. Yes, but it's just one of those things. And then when the Learfield folks came along, I was at the top of the list, I guess. I don't know. Or the recommendation said, hey, this guy's been doing it for all these years. And, and of course, we've had a couple, three different athletic directors since then. But it was a good time. And it's one of those things where you don't last forever.
You have been behind the mic, Larry, for pretty much every, I don't think pretty much, I mean, short of the first game ever being played, which I guess that was a big moment, but pretty much every big moment in the history of this program, you've broadcast.
Yes. Yes, I have.
What stands out to you? Obviously, there was the win over Rutgers. But just give me a couple of high points of things that that stand out for you looking back over the last, 20 plus seasons.
Oh, wow, there's so many. But there were a couple other games that we won that we weren't supposed to, and surprised a good-sized university. I'm trying to think of who it was now. I mean, it just so many. I think one of the first things for me was the first championship we won. Let me climb the ladder and cut down a piece of the net. And they did that. Wes did that every year that we won. I was one of the last, obviously, which makes sense. But I got to climb the ladder and cut down a piece of the net. And that was kind of exciting. That was a memorable thing. And if anybody, I know it's a little thing, but it's big.
Yeah.
You're part of the team when you do that.
How much do you have? I'm assuming you've still got those pieces of net, right? How much have from a memorabilia standpoint, how much have you saved over the years surrounding Chattanooga basketball?
Well, there's a lot of pictures, and the netting, the memories, the players who come up to you, and I hate this, the players who come up to you, when you're doing a game or halftime or something, former player from 20 years ago, and some I remember when I see them. Many I have to be refreshed. My mind has to be refreshed by somebody else because I go, who is that? Her name, I can't remember. And that's because of all, I guess, because of the amount of people, the amount of players we work with. And the fact that my brain continues to deteriorate in memory sometimes about people. I still, with baseball players, the same thing happens. It's one of those things, the older you get, the memory kind of takes a back seat for a moment.
Was there and I almost hate to answer this question because I know you're going to tell me you don't, it'd be like trying to pick your favorite child, but player that you enjoyed watching the most.
Oh my gosh.
In a women's basketball uniform.
God, many of them. So many of them. The recent ones were phenomenal. Be honest with you. But I don't know. Hey, there you go. I have a player in the back of my mind and I can't remember her name. From Wes's days. Played with Katie Earls. It's her sister, Jennifer. Jennifer
Wilson.
Wilson. Yeah, yeah, Jennifer Wilson was a very exciting player simply because she, at 5'10", 5'11", whatever she was, she outplayed some of the taller, quicker, and better players when she faced them. She's always been. But you flash forward now in the last 10 years, man, stop and think of the all-star type of players we've had. And it's hard to just pick one or two. I happen to pick her because she's just one of those people that you enjoy being around. And she was always enthusiastic and always positive about what she was doing. And of course, she's on to coaching now. I guess she's still coaching. I hadn't seen her in a couple of years. So, but anyway, she's still coaching, and the young women she coaches are getting knowledge from somebody who cares about them, as well as getting them to play well. She cares about them personally, and you can tell that in a few people, and she's one of those people.
You had a and have had good relationships with a lot of these coaches that have come through here. Obviously, you probably spent as much or more time, maybe you and Ann probably spent more time around Wes Moore than anybody else in Chattanooga. The one, though, that I want to get you to talk about is Coach Foster. Because I remember the first time I met Jim Foster, I walked away from it thinking, this man hates me. and I even said it to you one time. I'm like, Larry, and yes. You told me, you said, Chris, stop asking him dumb basketball questions. He said, if you will talk to him about other things. So I got, you know, I learned with Coach Foster that if I could get him talking about food and travel and places, all of a sudden he opened up to me, and then me asking him dumb basketball questions, he would answer the dumb basketball questions at that point. But I owe that to you, because you're the one that told me specifically your relationship with him, the Hall of Fame coach who comes here and closes out his career.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. When I did a post game with Coach Foster, or a pregame show with Coach Foster, he would go, yep, yes, no, yes, no, type of thing. Thinking, what the? I can't get out of him what I think I should be getting out of him. So I went to a source that I never thought of before, but I thought, hey, this person's going to enlighten me on what to do with Coach Foster. I passed on to you what Coach Foster's wife passed on to me. Said, don't ask him any basketball. He's not big on the stat thing, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Talk about the world. Talk about food. Talk about wine. Talk about anything. But don't ask direct basketball questions. So, the very next interview, we were chatting about various different things and slipping in basketball questions. He answered them. That's what I pass on to you, because if you did ask him basketball questions, he would. It'd be, yep, nope, yes, nope, yes, no. You know, he hated it in the press room when they would not question what he ate for breakfast, but they would ask, why did so-and-so do what she did and create the problem for not scoring or whatever, yada, yada, yada. And he would answer that yep, or not answer it at all sometimes. And I think the TV guys will tell you it took them a while to learn that you asked him worldly questions, not basketball. That's pretty much the way it went, and it worked out fine. And I didn't have any problem passing that on to you, because you were doing interviews with people, various different people, including UTC coaches. And I thought, well, geez, Chris needs to know, we'll get married by asking.
Well, it worked. It worked for sure. Your best Wes Moore story, again, because
oh my gosh,
you and Ann spent so much time with him during his time that he was here, especially on the bus and traveling. Your best Wes Moore story.
Oh my gosh, you're trying to get me to pull stuff out of the air here that or out of the memory. the memory. Well, I'm trying to think. There's so many times, many different situations, because we would I don't know. I don't remember if we even played golf. I can't remember. There's so many because, well, he was here, what, 14 years? And I was,
yeah.
And then I was involved with 12 of those years with him. So, but I can't remember, quite frankly. I mean, there's so many different situations, so many different opportunities that I probably didn't take advantage of, but should have. From West, he wasn't just a black and white on paper kind of guy. He loved the personalities of people. He enjoyed talking with people and enjoyed. I shared a lot of baseball stories with him because he's a baseball fanatic, and people that I had met over the course of the years that he wished that he had met in some cases players, and all of that. So. We shared a lot of different stuff. We shared a lot of family stuff too, with each other, and went to a few dinners at their place over in Hickson, and we had a lot of little, just a lot of different sharing of stories and events. Westmore, when Westmore got angry. He tried to do it by himself for the most part because he didn't want to show anger to his players. He didn't want to show anger to the fans. He didn't want to show anger out of bounds of what Westmore was. But there were a couple of times when he shared with me some things that probably were nobody else's business but his and mine. And he just didn't... He had an opportunity and took it when he was really at the height of his career going on in Chattanooga. But the opportunity knocked. He turned one down after he accepted it, turned one down, and then got where he wanted to be at NC State. And, of course, that's another legend being made at NC State as the previous person. He loved to eat, though. I'll tell you that. He loved to eat. Ain't no doubt about that. Oh, my God.
Well, look, that's the first question everybody wants to know when you get on the bus for a road trip, right, is where are we eating?
Well, and here's a story about that. This is a memorable moment with Westmore. We were headed down to Georgia Southern. We down through Atlanta, headed towards Montgomery, or not Montgomery, but
Macon.
And somebody said something about eating, and Coach goes, "Oh yeah, that's right. I got to get to some place to eat." And we're about 5-10 miles outside of Macon. There is no plan ahead of where we were going to eat. Somebody had a big book of places to eat. And I'm trying to think who it was. Geez, it might have been Ann that gave it to him. I don't know. I don't remember. But anyway, so he's flipping through this book, where to eat, and then it's on the phone. Oh, okay, thanks. They wouldn't give us free drinks. Oh, yeah, you free drinks? And blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay. That's where we're going to eat right there. He was big on the free drinks for the players. So they'd save an extra $2.50, $3, depending on where you were eating. And, of course, when I ate, I just would pay for myself a lot of times. And sometimes he wouldn't let me. So there you go. You're part of the team. You're going to do what we do. I said, okay, yes, sir. It's just the kind of guy he was.
Larry, I believe, I think I'm fairly certain I am correct in this. I guess it's you and JR, probably are the longest tenured broadcasters, sports broadcasters in this city, of all time. I don't think anybody that was here had the active longevity. Now, Bill Nash, Nasty was here for a long time, but Nasty, you know, Nasty wasn't, you know, Bill was kind of done with the on-air part.
Right.
Of his career. He was more in management and sales. You and Jim have been here and have maintained it on air and have, I think, really kind of set the bar, you know, for the rest of us. Do you think about that? Do you, because here's the deal, okay? I'm going to plug another podcast. There's a podcast called the PBP, okay? And it's all about baseball broadcasters. So I'm listening to the PBP last year, and Joe Davis is on there. Hmm. And Joe Davis is talking about the people that helped him in his career. Joe Davis names drop Larry Ward. I'm listening. Okay, Joe Davis, is for those that don't know, is the play-by-play voice of the LA Dodgers and is on national television calling NFL games. Brian Anderson, who's a Major League Baseball announcer, is on there. Brian Anderson names drop Larry Ward as a guy who helped him young in his career. Brian Anderson's calling the NBA in addition to Major League Baseball. That doesn't even touch the other guys here locally that you have mentored. I am in that group. Todd Agnew's in that group. Will Poindexter, our friend Mick Gillespie. We all owe a huge amount of debt to you for what you did for all of us. I met you the first time I was 19 years old, Larry. You very easily could have looked at me and gone foghorn leghorn on me and said, get away from you, boy. Get away from me, boy. You're bothering me. But you didn't do that. And I will be forever grateful to you for that. As is Todd, as is Will, Mick, Joe Davis, Brian Anderson, and Lord knows how many others that you have impacted. And I learned very early from you. You never go ask Larry Ward what he thought of a broadcast if you didn't want the truth. Because Larry was always going to give you the truth. So on behalf of all of those guys and myself, thank you for what you have done for me personally and how much you mean to me personally, as well as all the rest of those guys.
Well, thank you. Learning how to deal with people was taught to me at a very early age. And I was able to continue it as I grew older. I wasn't always correct. I didn't always do the right thing, personally, but I always tried to help people. My dad taught me that, and my mom. I grew up on a few thousand acres in Eastern Oregon, 25 miles from school, 25 miles from town. We learned how to work. We learned how to play. We learned how to treat other people the way you wanted to be treated. Taught those things to my youngsters. Taught those things to a lot of different people over the years. I don't know if that. I think it's sunk in to a lot of people, and it should. But you know, my dad, on several occasions, would be in the middle of a job on the ranch, and a neighbor had a problem, needed an extra part, needed something. My dad would drop everything he was doing and go help. That is what I learned. That is what I do when I can do it. When somebody says, gosh, I really don't know how to do this. I mean, I know how to do it either, but most of it after 70 plus years, most of the time you do know what to do. You do know what to change. You do know what switch you're supposed to flip instead of the other one. And trust me, I've asked a lot of people for help over the years too. It's not just me. I'm not the total expert of everything or of anything for that matter. But I just, when somebody asks, I try to help. You guys all of you, when you were younger, no different than me. When I was younger, excuse me, you learn by doing, you learn by watching, you learn by listening. Biggest thing is the listening part. That's the biggest thing. Ask a question, listen to what, and that's the way I was taught. That's all I can do when somebody asks me. When you ask me certain things, and some of those things when you were 19, boy, that goes way back, and I still can't remember that. But anyway.
Oh, Larry, I had this luscious full head of dark hair. Come on now.
Matter of fact, I think I did too at the same time.
You did.
It was a lot darker. It wasn't gray.
Like that's for sure, man.
But it's just one of those things where Chris and you and a Joe Davis, I remember the first time Joe Davis came to our ballpark when I first met him. And I thought, as just as raw as a bad, you know, a bad apple. He didn't. And when he asked a question, I would answer it truthfully. I would answer it with a suggestion. And there's several announcers in the Southern League who are in the big major leagues right now that I have schooled or when they ask a question, I give them an answer. I give them what I think is a positive answer. And share with them some of the little intricacies that I do. And I've shared things with you the same way. Tommy in Cincinnati now, he and I were pretty good friends. We chit-chat over the phone once in a while. He's always thankful this, that, whatever. I said, Tommy, you know what? You do a lot of that on your own. Don't forget how much you put into it, how much you worked at it. And that goes no different for you. It goes no different for Todd or anybody. That's the way it should be. When you make a mistake, you don't just try to cover it up, correct it. And that's the easiest thing. That's a whole lot easier than making a mistake sometimes, is to correct it and to make it better. And that's what that's all I try to do. And I've tried to do my entire life. I don't always succeed at it. I've made mistakes, there's no doubt. But that's being a human being. And sometimes you got to bite the bullet. And you got to pray hard, too. Because sometimes he's up there and he is watching. So trust me, you gotta ask for forgiveness from him sometimes, too. It's just one of those things, but I enjoy being around you guys. I enjoy watching you perform. I get a kick out of razzing you once in a while, and you look at me and I'm like, leave me alone, old man, leave me alone. But that's part of it. We in this business, you have to give, and you if you take little, you give a lot. That's
right.
That's the whole.
Right. Was there you and I, we've talked before about the guys that you listened to growing up, scanning the AM dial at night, listening to baseball on the radio. Was there a basketball guy that influenced you, or did you take those baseball influences and it just kind of flows over into basketball?
Bill Shonley of the Portland Trailblazers, who's recently passed away, I listen to all the time. And the guy who did the games at Oregon State, I would listen to because we carried him on our radio station. Well, games anyway. We carried him on the radio station. Two people that for a while I emulated a little bit, but I finally found my niche. I finally found where I wanted to do it. And I can remember long those some nights when you could pick up Los Angeles Dodgers and Vin Scully. And to this day, people keep saying, "You sound just like Vin Scully." No, I don't think I do. I don't think I do anyway. And they keep accusing me of sounding that way. And I try to detour and get around that and go a different direction. not because I don't love Vin Scully and his work. It was I want to be me.
Right.
That's what I want to do. I want to do mine. And the taking the ideas from some of the people over the years, I've inserted those, but I insert it with my inflection or my connotation of it, rather than just borrowing theirs, you know. So, but I still get accused every once in a while. And I'll admit this: once in a while, a Vin Scully ism comes to my brain, and I just throw it out there and keep on going. I just do. Same thing with Sean Lee and all of those guys. I've used some stuff from his and then I just quit because it's like stealing. You know what? You know, you're taking something from somebody, you're emulating them, but it's kind of like stealing, and I don't feel good about that. You know, so you still have fun.
So does Nell have plans for you now? Come November? I mean, she's going to have you at home in November. Is there a cruise being booked? Is there travel plans? Is there more time with the grandkids? What's happening?
I think the main thing is we get a chance to be together. We get a chance to do some things together that we've not done over winter times for the past 25, 6, 7 years. In the summertime, it works out well because now I don't travel. We do the virtual for the away game. If you could do that in basketball, it would probably be something I'd look into. But at the same time, we do have opportunities now that we didn't have before. We have talked about it a little bit, but you know, it's summertime right now. It's baseball season, and get this chore out of the way first, and we'll go from there. I think there's an opportunity for us to see our grandson and all of that a little bit more. I would like to go out west, but I'm not a big fan of that northwest wintertime stuff, so I don't know that we'll go that direction. But at any rate, just, you know, maybe enjoy the wintertime a little bit. You know, come to a game or two and reminisce a little about the players from the past and stuff. And whoever is going to sit in the saddle, I will listen to. Why not? I don't know where it's going or what it's doing. And of course, this is about a public of notification of what's happening, of me stepping aside from women's basketball broadcasts that anybody's heard of so far. I haven't told hardly anybody, mostly family members, of the decision that I made. We talked about it. My wife and I, Nell and I, talked about it. And it was a decision of the right decision, I think, at the right time. Not because we dislike any of the new people that are coming aboard, but it's time. It's time. In the next couple, 3 years, I'm going to try to stay around for at least the opening year of the baseball season with a new stadium. And I'm, you know, but there's some things going on physically that needs taken care of. And there's some other things that the heart says, you know what, it's time to step aside and let somebody else shine and let somebody else take a hold of it. And I don't know who that's going to be. You know, your name popped up for one, obviously. But, no, I don't know who it's going to be or when. I'm sure it will happen sooner or later and pretty soon. And it'll work.
Well, there's Larry, there's some awfully big shoes to fill. So for whoever has to slide into that chair, I admit I will miss when there is a questionable call during basketball season that goes against Chattanooga that I don't glance down your way and kind of get a little bit in my ear of you giving the official a hard time. I'll miss that. But thank you. Congratulations. But I think I speak for everybody that is a Mox fan and everybody that cares about that women's basketball program. Thank you, because you have been the portal, if you will, that has brought all those wins and all those championships to us for so long. It will be different. It will be different, but always wish you the best, and we'll see you at the ballpark, man.
Appreciate it. And do drop in. I'll put you on the air. Don't worry about it. You know that. You know that one. Thank you very much. Thank you to the UTC family. And thank you to the folks who are there for UTC, as we are. Our daughter graduated from there, and we contribute not a lot, but we contribute what we can. And I think the biggest contribution has been 25, 26 years of doing women's basketball. Time for somebody else to contribute. And I appreciate all of the compliments from you, Chris, and I look forward to seeing you down the road, whether it's at my place or over at yours.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Larry. Just again, on so many different levels, both on a personal note, just from how much Larry means to me, but also on behalf of so many folks that are supporters and fans of Chattanooga women's basketball, because again, for every major milestone in that program, Larry has been the guy that has been there. And when we couldn't be there as fans, he has been the one to deliver that and to be our eyes and our ears of what was happening. So it will not be the same. And certainly Larry leaves a massive legacy of excellence as he and Nell will set off on some adventures, hopefully, this fall, and we wish him all the best and look forward to seeing him back in the arena very soon. Thanks to you for joining us again this week as well. I want to remind you, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review Mox on the Mic. We deliver it to you every week, bringing you the latest with Chattanooga Athletics, and we try to visit with as many coaches and players as we can. So we'll look forward to catching up with you again next week. For our producer, Tate Johnson, I'm Chris Goforth saying so long, everybody, and go Mox.
Thanks for listening to Mox on the Mic. Please remember to rate, subscribe, and review. And we'll see you again soon.